Disrespectful all around.
I'm very sorry.
What are we going to talk about?
I don't know.
Let's talk about the blanket on Jamie's couch. Well, I don't know why nobody's brought that up yet.
Yeah, I don't know what this is.
Is that a Persian rug?
I think it's a tapestry.
No, that thing is in Persia.
Is 1,000 years old.
It's from Urban Outfitters.
I'm impressed that at least the couch doesn't have plastic coating on it.
I use this as a curtain in college. I thumbtacked it to the wall.
Hello, guys. Welcome to episode 2 of The Roundtable, hosted by Bujang Goaltending. I'm here with my regular cohorts here, Jamie Phillips and Michael Albanese. How's it going, fellas?
Good to see you again. How are you liking our social distancing?
It's probably the most exciting. This is the most exciting thing I've done all week. So the fact that I get to see your two beautiful faces is like brings my day from a 5 to at least a 6.
Yeah, that's a lie. Pretty good. It's a whole point.
That's a lie. It's a lie.
That's a lie.
Everybody staying safe?
So far, trying to.
Yeah, we're not allowed to say the words because YouTube will flag this. So let's make sure we don't say anything that's going on. We'll just call it
the current situation.
That's a good one.
That's right.
Hey, I have an actual question for you though. So obviously they're canceling minor hockey tryouts, right?
Yeah. Tryouts are supposed to start April 13th.
Oh, so what are I was thinking about this the other day and I was just like, how are you as a goalie coach? Like, how are you going to set up like a training structure for goalies to get ready for, I guess they'll push it back and just to fall camps, right?
Yeah, I'm assuming day one of tryouts will be August 18th. That's just a guess on my part. I don't know if I'm not part of Hockey Canada. It's kind of the golden question, man. Like, what are guys going to do? So right now there's not much we can do. Everything's closed. All the rinks are closed. Training facilities are closed. We've been putting some stuff up on virtually for guys to follow if they wanted to do some hand eye and yoga stuff. But yeah, that's it. Like, this is kind of unprecedented. So moving forward, this could either be a huge advantage for some guys, and this could be a disadvantage for guys that are looking to play that AAA level. It's really going to be kind of a learning experience for everybody, but I'm not really sure how it's going to play out. So we're just going to kind of play day by day and see what goes on. But I could see kind of what I've been saying is, I think in terms of summer development, whenever that starts, based off when this kind of clears up, I think we'll have a lot more focused summer development. So kind of those fringe guys that when they finish their tryouts, if they didn't make the team they wanted, they may mail kind of that summer development in because they're a little bit more discouraged. Where I think this year, those guys have something to work towards, which is that August 18 tryout date. So we might get some guys that really bring it this summer and really use that as their advantage to kind of go into August 18th and kind of set the tone and really turn some heads and maybe make that jump one or even two levels this year. So
that makes sense. So basically, as soon as the rinks open, it's time to get to work.
Yeah, like my tentative date to start was supposed to be May 19th. Whether that happens or not, we'll see. But that was kind of my official start of my summer development program, which goes 12 weeks. So I don't know. I'm like with every other goalie coach, things are kind of up in the air right now, and we're kind of spitballing as we go. And just so we know, if I run out of the room, I'm waiting on a call for one of my guys from a team from out west. So if my phone goes and I run out, I'm doing some business transactions for some of my clients. So
business
transactions. Yeah, you're gonna have to take that call because we need another reason to get out to the BCHL showcase this year.
Yes, we do.
And on the subject of minor hockey tryouts, you brought up an interesting point. I hadn't really considered that in every other year tryouts are in the spring, and this kind of offers some of those fringe guys that are looking to make, you know, double A or triple A or move up in their game a chance to dial in the summer and delay their first impression to August. Because how many times have you seen guys get cut in the spring and then work all summer to get better, and then by the time, you know, fall or early season comes around, they're better than the guys that they got cut for? So I mean, what do you have to say about something like that?
I think it eliminates excuses. Like, we all know which guys, everyone thinks they're working hard, right? But as goalie coaches, we know which guys are actually working hard. But this will definitely eliminate that excuse of, I grew 3 inches over the summer, or I worked my butt off over the summer, I didn't get an opportunity. Well, now they have that opportunity to go in August. So that excuse is gone. So it's definitely going to be, in terms of holding guys accountable, for us, it's definitely going to be a different summer feel. But I think it's going to be, I'm excited. I think it's going to be fun.
Pretty level playing field for everybody going into camp, basically. So in that case, like, you have to take advantage of these days that you're stuck at home by doing something that's getting you better. I think we talked about last episode, whether it's hand-eye or yoga, home workouts. I know the in-house trainer that you have, Dave, is making online programs for guys to do at home. Watching film, like, you got to take advantage of it, because who knows? Like, we may only have a month before tryouts start. Like, nobody knows.
Yeah.
So you can't.
Are we allowed to talk about the thing you got going on with goalie coaches, or are we keeping that?
We'll have a pod. We'll have a pod for that.
Well, we'll bring that up at a later date.
Hopefully soon. I should actually have a phone call about that today.
Well, okay. Just for everyone listening, keep an eye out for Jamie and Victorum Nutrition and something to do with goalie coaches on Instagram. Something's coming, so that'll be pretty interesting and be fun too.
Yeah, it'll be fun little challenge to do for a couple of weeks. Keep us occupied while we're stuck at home.
Yeah, be creative, guys. Whatever you guys can do to be creative and keep yourself entertained, right? Just get through it. We got probably another month of this, but whatever you can do day by day, find something to get better, whether it's yoga, hand eye, find a hill, do some hill sprints, right? Dial in your nutrition. We talked a lot last time about watching hockey games. Get that hockey IQ up, right? I know a couple guys have already texted me saying, hey, I watched this. What do you think of this, right? So we might even do some goal breakdowns too at a later date. So same with us. Mm-hmm. We're trying to find ways to be creative and keep ourselves entertained. But yeah, it's definitely interesting time anyway.
And when we talk about watching a hockey game, that's actually watching and focusing on the game. That's not having the game on while you text your buddy or cruise Instagram. That's actually watching and seeing what's going on, maybe even making some notes, rewinding. I rewind games all the time.
What is this, VHS?
Well, I was born in the 80s, man. We rewind things. It's the games are taped. I haven't moved to Gavin to digital yet.
Okay, well, we have to mention we have a guest on, our first guest to the roundtable. I mean, I'll do a brief introduction, and then he is Andrew D'Agostini. He was my goalie partner for 2 years. I play with him in Reading, and I play with him in Brampton, so I'm excited to get him on. He's got a crazy couple stories, so it's going to be a good chat with him, and we can get some of the questions out. And for our listeners and viewers, you know, we're gonna talk to a pro goalie and see kind of what he says about, you know, growing up and the grind to get to pro from minor hockey to the OHL and into Canadian University and into pro. So it's gonna be a good interview. Looking forward to that one. All right, we're pleased to bring in our first guest of the Roundtable Podcast, my goalie partner, my on the road roommate, Andrew D'Agostini. Welcome aboard.
To be back and reunited again. It seems like every year we find a way to reconnect.
every year at the end of the year, we just have it. For those that don't know, I was loaned to Reading at the end of the season last year, and Dags and I were partners. And then this season I was traded to Brampton, and Dags and I were partners, and just seems to be a trend by now.
You seem to get traded a lot. You just gotta find his butt to stick.
I think I trump him this year.
Yeah,
I was going through.
No, go ahead, Bish.
I was going through your elite prospects, and you did some traveling.
I was sick all year. I don't want to think about what it might have been, but I dealt with like pneumonia for 4 months and like amongst all the traveling. Healthy now, which is great, but looking back on the year and how crazy it was, I had 11 personal days of travel to tell you what the life of an ECHL player is like. When I say 11 days of personal travel, I mean like me on the road in my Jeep for the day. You know, for example, drive to Wilkes for camp, reassigned to Wheeling, drive home, drive back the next day to redo my passport, drive from Wheeling home when I got released, picked up by Toledo, you drive there, traded back to Wheeling, like 11 personal days during the season of me on the road. So it's a grind, and you just do it because you love it.
I gotta take this opportunity.
No, I'm gonna, before we go, we're gonna get into it, but mentioned it, the pneumonia story. You told me that in the hotel in Norfolk, and I could not, I don't know how you're alive right now. Can you just break, we gotta hear that story.
Neither do I. it came out of nowhere. Honestly, I was so lucky that my girlfriend had come up to visit in Wheeling just as I was getting it. And so I was like, you know, it's Wheeling, so we're going to make the most of what we can do around there. And, you know, we'll go to Pittsburgh and we'll do some stuff. And she gets there the day that she gets there. I cannot move like an inch. And so I had spent like 4 or 5 days in bed, not moving. And she took great care of me. And I would try to, thank God the apartments were like right across the street from the rink. So I would walk across to watch the game. Try to bear with that and then go home and right back in bed. And I could start to feel myself become dead weight as guys were coming down from the American League. And we already had two goalies that I knew were pretty comfortable and stable given their situations, and two really good goalies. But I could just feel with, you know, as much as they wanted to keep me there and wait for me to have an opportunity, I was dead weight and I was a roster space. And so I got released, and that might have been the hardest day of my year, not because I was offended about being released, but because I had to drive home under like the most brutal conditions. But you know, managed to make it, and as soon as I crossed the border, I got the call from Toledo that there was an opportunity there. And you know, you guys understand how hard it is to come by opportunities. And so I had to find that balance between being completely honest with them with what was going on, and at the time I hadn't known for sure it was pneumonia, being completely honest with them and also not passing up the opportunity. And so I said, listen, I'm almost home, I need like a couple days just to regroup, and I'll meet you guys at your next home game. And they had no problem with that. They were fantastic. And it was that following day, my first day at home, that my parents convinced me to go get checked, and I just wanted to spend a day on the couch and recover. I didn't want to spend 4 hours in the hospital. And so I go to a walk-in, and the doctor says there's something very abnormal about your breathing. You need to go to the hospital. So sure enough, I had to go to the hospital for the day, and they're like, you got a pretty severe pneumonia. And I asked them, can I play? And they're like, well, yeah, you can try. And so that weekend I met Toledo in Toledo for a home game, and dressed for the home game. I'm not playing. I could barely get through warmups. I jump in for 3-line shooting, take 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and right to center ice, hunched over, like couldn't breathe. And so it was a battle to get my lungs back.
And then you played Toledo sick. And then what happens after Toledo? You get a little healthy, and then what happens again after that?
Yeah, so I finally start to get healthy. I managed to get a couple games under my belt, and it's starting to look like there might be some opportunities. And then they had the weekend where Howard went down, Bernier went down, and so they had to like sign goalies, and one of their goalies was coming back from injury. And so we ended up having like 4 or 5 goalies in Toledo. And at the same time, Andy Kyoto with Pittsburgh said that, you know, we could use you back in Wheeling. Alex Diorio's got an injury for, you know, looks like it's going to be a little while. And so it was like the same day where I knew that something was going to happen to one of us in Toledo, but I didn't want to go to the coach and say, hey, listen, I've got an opportunity elsewhere. I'm kind of like bailing. So it was perfect that I could go in. And he said, listen, at some point I could leave you on the roster for a little while, but we're going to look to do something. And I said, perfect. I've got an opportunity back in Wheeling. And he said, go for it. And a lot of the coaches are supportive that way, especially when you make a decision easy for them. But literally that day that I packed up my stuff and left, then the pneumonia came back after getting over my first round of antibiotics. And so the doctor in Toledo gave me a prescription for a stronger antibiotic. I go and rejoin Wheeling, managed to get a couple games, go home for Christmas break for literally a few days. These are those other travel days, 2 or 3 days. Drive back to Wheeling, New Year's Day, released as they got Emil Larmy from Wilkes come down for some games. So that now there's four goalies hanging out in Wheeling, and you know that there's just no room for you. And so they had to send me back. And I was lucky to get the opportunity with Brampton, and they gave me a couple games, and they went well and kind of secured my spot there for the rest of the year. And the rest panned out how it went. We ended up with Jamie for a little bit too.
So every time you went back to Wheeling, you got severe pneumonia, basically.
Yeah. Now that you put it that way,
So just skipping that road trip next year.
Yeah.
And I have to, yeah.
All right. So you grew up in, you're a Toronto guy, GTA guy. You're Scarborough?
Yeah.
Scarborough. So you would have played in the elusive GTHL. So what made you become a goalie when you were younger?
Well, I started off as a player, learned how to skate, played a couple years. And my uncle, who was a lot younger than my other aunts and uncles. And so he was like the fun uncle that we would go and we would play ball hockey and road hockey with. And he was a goalie growing up. He played for the Young Nats, AAA. A very, very small goalie, but like fantastic. This guy could move like, he was like a Jeff Lurg. I'm sure you guys know who Jeff Lurg is. But
Toledo Walleye alum.
Yes. Yeah. So my uncle was a great goalie, but he had all the gear. And I was lucky enough that a lot of that gear was probably a little bit big for me, but not too much that I couldn't wear. And so I would put on the gear and I would just, something drew me to being the goalie. And as you go through it and you make those first couple saves, I think those dopamine hits of making the flashy glove save are what drew me to it. And so I got the opportunity to play once with my house league team. And from then on, I wanted to remain the goalie. And I was like in a road hockey glove. The equipment I was wearing was complete garbage. But something about it, I really enjoyed it. And and if you want the extension of that story, a select coach had brought me in to play a game completely. He came and watched one of my house league games randomly and said, we need a goalie to fill in. I had to borrow equipment because the gear I was wearing was so bad. I had to borrow equipment from my older brother's best friend at the time and wear it for this game. I show up and I was wearing player gloves for the game. yeah, I'm not kidding. Man. Player gloves. What? And we got completely dusted, like 7-0. And something about that experience kind of just kept me with it. And the next year I went on to play not even single A. It was like local Scarborough select. And I was a bit of a late bloomer. I played it was called SHA in Scarborough for a couple years and then went on to the GTHL, double A for 2 years, triple A for 2 years with the Markham Majors. And managed to make a name for myself pretty quick and was drafted in the third round to Peterborough.
So that would bring it in. So you played 4 seasons with the Peterborough Petes. Can you just tell the listeners out there that don't know, like, what's it like to play in the OHL?
So I played my underage year. There's your buddy. I played my underage year and right through to my overage. So I actually played 5 years in Peterborough. Not a lot of goalies get to play their whole career in one city. And my experience in the OHL was amazing. I was lucky to have a great role model in my dad, who said, go there and make the most of absolutely anything you can do. And the worst thing that could come out of that is a better chance of keeping your spot, because I went to camp not knowing what was going to happen. I was decent, but I had the GM, Jeff Tuohy, at the time. He showed good faith in me and wanted to develop me as a 16-year-old. And so I just, I got myself well involved in the community, worked my ass off, and managed to show half decent. I didn't play a lot my first year, but, you know, I showed well when I got in there, and it gave me, a good opportunity to play lots of games the next year. You definitely have to have not a lot, but some luck go your way. And, the following year, we got rid of who was going to be our overage goalie, and that kind of pushed me into a starting position at a very early age. But my experience in the OHL was amazing. I represented Team OHL in the Subway Series. I played for the under-18s, was undrafted, but you know I had some interest, and I got to experience the whole thing. I made the most out of, like I said, out of absolutely everything I could, and I really have no regrets looking back on my career. I think that I got a lot out of it. Obviously, some more winning on Peterborough's end would have been nice. We struggled for a few years, but managed to experience a bit of a playoff run. We were down in my overage year 3-0 against Kingston, who had beat us 11-5 in our home opener game. And we came back, and Nick Ritchie scored in game 7 in overtime in Kingston to take us to the second round. We were completely gassed and then got swept by Oshawa. But I had been waiting for a long time for that playoff kind of opportunity. And we brought a lot of excitement back to the town. And Peterborough's been pretty good since.
So you went from playing limited games as a 16-year-old to, I think it was 43 starts as a 17-year-old?
Yeah, something along those lines. And like I said, you guys know as goalies, 43 games, I don't think they were all starts, and I don't think they were all finishes. Peterborough was not a great team. Like, if you looked at – we had to bring in some experience in Bryce O'Hagan became my partner that year, if you guys know Bryce.
Oh, yeah, I know Bryce. Bryce, great guy.
Yeah, and so if you look at – our game totals that year, you're going to find more than 68 games. We battled hard to try and win games. And it was a hard couple years. But at the same time, the way I had to look at it, because if you're hard on yourself, you'll go out of your mind. But the way I had to look at every experience, whether I was giving up 9 goals or standing on my head and losing by 1 or winning by 1 or whatever it was, I would go home and I would say, listen, you logged another 30 minutes, 60 minutes, 65 minutes of hockey under your belt at the OHL level. Like, learn from however it went, whether it went good or went bad, and continue to move forward. And this is all part of the journey. No matter how bad the experience went, you grow from it. And so that really kept me sane through a lot of those hard years. And for any young goalies that go through times like that, that ask for my advice, that's what I tell them. If they have a bad game, you learn from whatever you can from that, and just no matter how it went, it's experience under your belt, and you just keep moving forward.
So you represented Canada at the U18s. What was that experience like? I mean, I never got the opportunity to represent Team Canada anything, and so I'm pretty jealous of that. So just tell the viewers out there, like, what's that like to actually represent your country?
It was my first trip to Europe, which was awesome. We went to Germany. I played with a lot of great players. Representing the country is it's great. When I got the call, it was one of those calls where, you know, I got emotional when they told me that I had been selected for the team. We ended up losing to John Gibson. Subban was my partner. He was the starting goalie for the tournament. I managed to get a game in the round robin and got a shutout against I can't remember who, but they weren't a great team. They put me in hoping that I would come in and do the job and help get the team the win, and everything went well. So I can look back on my career and say that I won a couple games for Team Canada, and the experience was amazing. We were treated incredibly well. It was a disappointing end to what was a great opportunity for us to win it. And just the way the schedule worked out was we played the late game on the late semifinal game on the night before the finals. Like they would play the gold and bronze medal game the next day. And so we went into overtime and lost to Team USA. And then I got the bronze medal game the next day as the early game against Team Russia. And Yakupov got a hat trick in that game. Vasilevsky was in net for them. Like we were up against a tough team. It was a close game, but we came out on the wrong end. But I'll always look back on that. I've got the jersey. I've got, you know, the team picture, and it's an experience I'll never forget.
That's unbelievable. And then so after 5 years in the OHL, you made a decision to go play CIS or U Sports. It's now our Canadian University. Yeah. How come you went to Guelph?
Well, part of me wanted to make the jump right to pro, but I didn't have the opportunity, or at least an opportunity worth taking. I had a lot of interest from school, and looking back on it, I'm glad that I went to school. I've spent a long time doing school, whether we talk about that or not. I'm finishing a master's degree at this point out of Guelph. So Guelph had a big impact on my life in general, away from the rink as well. But Guelph was my first opportunity to win a championship. I chose Guelph because I went to the campus. The coach showed a lot of faith in me. The campus was amazing. I knew that I would go to school for what I was hoping would be a limited time, and it turned out to be in 2 years, but I wanted to make sure I enjoyed myself and got the experience. To be honest, it came down to Guelph and UOIT, who really, really pushed hard to have me there. I just felt like I would enjoy my experience of campus living and going to campus every day through Guelph. And so everything managed to work out well, and we had a lot of success, and I think it was good for my confidence as a goalie. I won some awards, and we won a championship. We went to nationals, all of that stuff. And so it turned out to be a good thing for my hockey career, because ultimately it got me the chance to play a couple games. After my second season with Guelph, I got to play a couple games with the Brampton Beast. And sometimes you get that one little quick opportunity that could make or break your career, let's say. And Brampton was a bad team that year. I was like their 16th or 17th goalie on roster. I think probably their 80 or 90th like player roster that year. So they broke all kinds of records, but I managed to show really well, and the team came out and played for me. It was like one of those points in the season where the team has nothing to lose, except we could spoil it for teams trying to make a playoff push or to get into the playoffs. And that's what we did, and that got me a contract the next year with Brampton.
So you played a full season at Brampton the next year out of school. You got called up to the Marlies, but you didn't get any games. And then the season after, you start in the SPHL, the Southern Professional Hockey League, for those that don't know. I've never played in that league. I know guys have, and I've only heard stories about it. But is it actually as wild as they say?
I've experienced wild things with the ECHL, whether it's pushing a bus across the border of Buffalo, New York, and we were on Barstool Sports, or bus breaking down, like everything. Once you think you've seen it all, you really haven't. I will say my thoughts on the SPHL, it can be an amazing experience for a lot of players. It wasn't for me, if I'm going to be completely honest. I ended up in a beautiful spot. Pensacola was amazing. Where we lived, you could cast a line from your balcony and catch your dinner if you wanted. I have a lot of friends that still play for the team, and you know, they're catching sharks every day. Like, you can't go wrong with something like that. You travel to some amazing places. Our team struggled with Pensacola, and they expected they have high expectations of that team there. We struggled as a team. We were all responsible for it. I think part of me at times kind of played down to the level. I went to Allen American's training camp and had probably the best training camp I've ever had at the professional level. And I think that they just had already predetermined that I would go to Pensacola temporarily. And part of me didn't want to go there at all. And so when I went there, I worked hard. I did everything I could. And really, I just showed that I wanted my opportunity back at the ECHL level. And I don't think that they liked seeing that there. And I understand if they're having all their players pulled up, it's no different than at the ECHL level, where the American League pulling up players. And so ultimately, like, my parents are 5 hours away from coming to visit for a week, like from here, driving down, and I got let go by Pensacola. Get let go by Pensacola, and at that point, I'm like, "What is pro hockey? I don't even know what the heck's going on anymore." That night, I get an opportunity to join a different team, and I told them, "Listen, I'm going to take a few days and just spend a few days with my family, and I'll let you know. But I might just go home and play the waiting game and see if anything else comes up." I decide to join them for the sake of staying sharp and staying on the ice, and join them for a week. I think it was even 5 days, and get picked up by Reading after 5 days. Join them for a 3-3 at home, end up playing all three games, and they all went really well. We had a 3-3 against Allen, who let me go from camp, and won all three. So I think I kind of solidified my spot back in the ECHL, and that's it. So the league itself, it has a lot of great things to offer. If you're going there to make money, think again. If you're going there for an amazing experience and of living and doing things away from the rink and seeing places you've never seen, definitely grinding out tough travel, which you do get used to, then the SPHL is not bad that way. The level of play, you do have a lot of players that care about the game and that work hard. And to be completely honest, you have some players that can get by and are definitely equally valuing their experience away from the rink.
It's a pretty between the lines on that one.
Yeah, pretty PC way of saying that. That's
gotta keep it PC.
Yeah, and for people that don't know, I mean, like when Dags just said he played all three games, there might be some younger goalies at home thinking like, "Oh, we play tournaments and stuff. We play a couple games a day." It's very hard to describe what it's like to play all three games in a week on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or a 4-5. You play Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the pro level, and then you add in bus trips, you add in hotels, you add in gas station food. How do you grind like a week like that? If you have to go all 4-5 and there's a bus trip between each game, like how do you grind through that? Like, what do you tell yourself?
So I experienced that twice in my career. And so one of them, we'll travel the day before the game to Toledo on a Thursday, played on a Friday. Then we drove to Kalamazoo, which was a close trip. You're still getting in late after a game. Played Kalamazoo in the afternoon, drove to Indianapolis, played the next day. So when you really think about it, a 3-3 is not a 3-3. It's like Friday night to Sunday afternoon, by the time you're done three games with travel in between, that's one of those things where you're going like a shift at a time, a commercial break at a time. And especially at, you know, when you're playing those three and threes and you're doing the whole thing, you cannot think about the Sunday afternoon game. Like, you got to go a shift at a time or a period at a time or whatever is going to allow you to chip away at it. But by Sunday, you're at a point where, especially if one or both of the games, Friday and Saturday, went well, you know that there's a little bit less pressure on you for that Sunday game, that you can play a little bit looser and you just grind it out. The few days following that are a complete wreck. You are in full on recovery mode. But it's amazing when you find yourself in that situation, you know how to grind through it and you find that energy. And a lot of that energy has to come from up here. But the crash is hard after that. You got to take good care of yourself.
There's a lot of people out there that when they think of pro hockey, they think of, you know, you're taking the private jets, the NHL 24/7, Louis Vuitton duffel bags, Mercedes Benzes. But, you know, for most guys, myself included, you and the majority of guys that go pro, you have to understand that you play a game, you play the same 60 minutes as the guys in NHL, but instead of hopping on a plane to go home because you hardly ever play back-to-backs, you might be taking an 8-hour bus ride, getting at 7 in the morning to your next city. You play at 7 at night. You have to wake up. You have to pregame skate at 11 or 11:15, nap, play. You know, say the game goes to overtime. You're not leaving the rink till 11 p.m. Then you hop on a bus. You have another 4-hour drive. You get in at 4 in the morning. It's the same routine. And the Sunday games are always, the latest is 5 o'clock. So sometimes you're playing three games. And you're playing three games, they're not even broken up in a 24-hour period. So that's just a little clarification for viewers out there that might be like, oh, you can't complain, you're playing pro hockey. Like, what does it matter? Like, it's very difficult on your bodies to, you know, you're playing on 3-4 hours of sleep. And the only thing you had to eat was a hotel continental breakfast, the Frosted Flakes and a stale bagel. But so like for people out there, that's just a little bit more behind the scenes of that. Do you guys have any questions for Dags before we talk about his charity work?
I'm interested to hear about the charity work.
Yeah. So what is Saves for CS and how did that get started, and tell us all about it?
Saves for CS started in 2011. It was my third season in the OHL. I was at a point where high school was finishing, was transitioning into university, where the OHL is great that way because they encourage you. A lot of teams have rules where you have to be in studies in one way or another, and they cover it for you, at least a course or two at the university level or college level. And I would just say that I was looking to get involved on the community side because of Peterborough introducing me into the whole philanthropy side of things. And you know, over the course of, I guess, 10 or 11 years now of being involved with it, you realize that sports is, in my opinion, maybe the best vehicle for doing philanthropic or charity initiative work. And so at the time, so Saves for CF is for cystic fibrosis, but it's at a point now where I got involved, not, and this is not going to sound great, but not just for cystic fibrosis. Of course, the kid who got me involved was he was 6 years old. They came in to tell me about a CF awareness night that they were going to host in Peterborough. I had no idea what the cause was, what the disease was. They explained it, explained the damage it does to your organs. It's an underdog of a disease when you think of like media attention and that sort of thing. And so I just felt like this was my opportunity to get more seriously involved, instead of just doing a tweet encouraging fans to come and join us that night. I met the mother and I said, what can I do to get more involved? Like right now, It hit a string and hit a chord that opened my eyes to how lucky I was to be a junior hockey player and, you know, as healthy as you could be. And the things that we've accomplished since with that, it's grown a lot more personal at this point. And so now it didn't start with a direct connection to CF, like in my family or anything. But now I call some of my best friends, people that suffer from cystic fibrosis. And the way it works is we have local sponsors that donate a dollar for every save that we make. For me, when I was with Brampton for a couple of years, we have a sponsor in Reading that sponsored me and Philly when he was in Reading. And even this year, our owner in Brampton, through his company, sponsored us for Saves for CF again. It runs in Guelph. It continues to run in Peterborough. And so we've got lots of teams running this program, which is great for actually fundraising money, but the awareness that it's gotten has been just as good. And like I said, it's equally as much for cystic fibrosis awareness as it is for just promoting young leaders in sports to pursue whatever it is that they've been affected by. And I know Philly's seen me work firsthand on my paper of my master's degree, where I've interviewed young athletes prior to playing professionally, to get inside their mind on why they have started initiatives. So young athletes that have started a charity initiative, and just try to understand why they do it so that I could develop a framework to help promote philanthropy, not just at the professional level, where there is a part of it that is, you know, for publicity or it does shine a good light on you in the community. When you find guys do it at the junior level or even the minor hockey level, which I had a couple young goalies get on board for, the motives are a lot more organic. And so that's when I think it should be starting. And it's had all kinds of amazing benefits for the cause, for me, for being a role model to a lot of younger athletes.
So where can people go to learn more about Saves for CF? And, you know, if they want to make a donation, they make donations. Like, is there the website, the social media?
Yeah, savesforcf.com, simple enough, at Saves for CF with the number 4 on my social media. It's not hard to find. And with the website on social media, you'll find links where you can read more, you can donate, you can read stories about people that suffer from the disease, and they need your encouragement more now than ever, because they are one of those exposed groups that if they catch what's going on right now, it's fatal. So my heart is with them right now, definitely.
Do you guys have any other questions for Dags before we wrap this up?
Yeah, that's amazing that you're doing that, first of all. You said you're doing your master's. What are you doing your master's in? What's your plan in terms of career and then moving forward post-hockey?
So my master's is a master's in leadership. It's an executive program. Kind of goes hand in hand with the community stuff, because I think that there's a lot more room for us athletes as being leaders, not just on our team, but in the community. It's going to open a lot of doors for not necessarily one specific job, but I think it's going to allow me the skills to be able to succeed in whatever direction I go. It's helped me big time. I think in many ways it's helped me keep my job at times in pro hockey, just being a great teammate on the ice and off the ice. But at this point, I'm slowly putting together a program for teams to try and almost like a leadership presentation that I can give to minor hockey teams, junior teams, to show them the importance of leadership, not just in the community, but like in a team dynamic and culture. Everything rises and falls on leadership. If you don't have it, you're going down. If you do, you can accomplish some amazing things. And a lot of the tools and the principles of leadership are so simple and people already know it and they just need to be reminded of it and maybe given a few of the important ones that they can follow on. When I was, you know, when I was young, 15, 16 years old, and Philly and I have had this conversation too. I used to read all the time. I used to read all kinds of books and I thought that it was making me better. And because we would just read and read and read and read with the right intentions of self growth, but it was more finishing the book that made me feel good and not really remembering it or being able to apply it. And what school has been great for is teaching me how to learn and how to break things down that way. And I think that kind of what that has done for me on the topic of leadership has really allowed me the tools that I think I'll be able to share some of that knowledge with our youth, with hockey players, team captains, coaches. I actually had a call from a coach a couple days ago asking advice on something, a professional coach. And so leadership and having those skills, it really makes you indispensable and can take your team to the next level. I've seen teams just completely become corrupted because it had no leadership. And I've seen lousy teams do amazing things because a leader was able to bring a group of guys together. And for that reason, I think it's such a key in sports, in business, in life, at home, you know.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome. That's definitely something I'd be interested in having you come in and talk to my athletes about too. Because trying to develop the next group of leaders is something that I'm constantly focusing on, whether it's on the ice or in the gym or just talking to them one-on-one. But I think, yeah, that's amazing. It's definitely something that my camps are definitely going to need some guest speakers. So yeah, if you're interested, I'm definitely interested in having you come in.
Anytime. Happy to help.
All right, Dags. Well, thanks for for coming on. I really appreciate it. Where can goalies find you on your social media and stuff?
Yeah. D'Agostini 30. And I think you'll find me, on Instagram and Twitter. I think I have no choice but to be a little bit more active now being trapped at home. Yeah, you can find me there. Happy to connect with guys if they have any questions. Like I said, in learning about the topic of leadership, my experience in professional hockey has just made me really inclined to want to help with no strings attached. So I encourage people to reach out if they have any questions, and I'll, you know, assuming I see it, I'll be happy to get back to you.
Awesome, Dag. Thanks a lot for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jamie. Nice to meet you guys, and we'll connect soon. I won't hold you down.